We made this.
Podcast Network. I'm your host, Carpenter Lockwood, and today we'll be diving into the Disney Plus series Loki, first episode going by the name of Glorious Purpose. And here to discuss this is my co-host, Mark Adams. Hello, Mark.
Hello. Two episodes in a row. Hello. Very excited about Loki. And spoilers, still excited about Loki.
Yes. It's a good day when a new episode of a new TV show comes out.
Wednesday is the new Friday.
Wednesday is the new Friday now, yeah. I don't know why they decided on Wednesday instead of Friday.
I quite like it because I'm watching The Bad Batch as well and I'm watching MODOK. And I quite like the idea of different episodes of stuff I like on different days. So I've got MODOK and Bad Batch on Fridays and I've got Loki on Wednesdays. Good times.
Does sound like a nice schedule. Maybe they chose to put it on Wednesday because Loki is a time variant.
That actually makes a lot more sense than you being that flippant. I think that could actually be it.
So, first episode. Do you wanna give it a 10 out of 10? What did you think? Well, a mark out of 10 even.
Don't like doing marks out of 10. Because whatever mark you give for the first episode you watch, that becomes the base of whether or not, if it's better, it has to have a higher mark. If it's not as good, So if you set the bar kind of high, you don't leave it anything to get any better. But you don't want to be stingy either, so I bloody hate doing.
Yeah,
I hate doing marks out of 10. And I resist it, even though I know the boss really likes it and gets cross with me when I don't do it. Why don't you give me your marks out of 10 first, and then I'll decide compared to you.
Okay, well, I am also not very good at marks out of 10. I tend to view things on whether I had fun or not, and if I did, then it's good, and if I didn't, then it's bad. So there's not many films that don't make it onto the good list. Let's have a think. Maybe like a 7.5 and 8.
I was thinking along those lines too.
Because I think, as our friend Craig said in his review, there's a lot of exposition. You know, the plot isn't quite as fast as it is in, say, Falcon and the Winter Soldier in the first episode.
No.
Which is totally fine. But yeah, I feel like, obviously, it's going to get more exciting as the series goes on. I mean, honestly, most of my points go to that terrific credit sequence, the outro.
I think
just
for me,
gives me so much life.
I think for me, it's an 8 as well. And I think it was inevitable that it had to have exposition. But as exposition goes, I don't feel like it could have done it any better than it did.
Oh, yeah, it was very, very good. All right, so in this series, we're following 2012 Avengers Loki, who escaped from his imprisonment on Asgard. Well, he didn't escape. He escaped from the fate of being imprisoned in Asgard due to the events of Avengers Endgame, where the time-traveling Avengers from that timeline went back to steal the Infinity Stones, and Loki got hold of the Tesseract, and then ended up in Mongolia. And that's kind of where we start off with him.
Yeah.
Getting caught by the TVA.
The little recap, which, you know, was clips from Endgame, it just reminded me, and I presume everybody else, of how incredible an actor Tom Hiddleston really is. You can't see half of his face. He acts with nothing but his eyes. And he's still absolutely brilliant. I could gush about Tom Hiddleston for forever. So let's just assume that I love Tom Hiddleston. I think he's brilliant. And try and avoid me going, oh, I love Tom Hiddleston for the next hour.
Well, I mean, that is kind of a little bit what we're here to do. But
oh,
yeah.
He's pretty as well, though, isn't he?
He is very pretty. I love seeing him back in that Asgardian armor.
He's so
pretty. You know,
pretty.
It's just such a fit. It's an amazing costume.
I did like seeing him in the Asgardian costume, but I think I liked it more when it was immediately lost.
Yeah, yeah.
That was
sure,
not
yeah.
unpleasant viewing.
Yeah. Yeah, that was funny. You know, I love that little robot. That little clothes robot that they have up there, and very much reminded me of the Doctor Who episode on, was it Satellite 5?
Yes.
I think it was called, with Captain Jack Harkness and the makeover robots.
Yes, I think you're
right.
I also think that that's possibly the only real criticism you could legitimately have about this. Is that there are a lot of things that are clearly inspired by Doctor Who and other wibbly-wobbly, timey-wimey type shows. But that was almost an inevitability, I think.
I mean, Doctor Who has laid decades of groundwork in time travel sci-fi. So, you know, a lot of tropes and things either have come from Doctor Who or have been explored already in Doctor Who. So, yeah, it's pretty inevitable with a bureaucratic society of time travelers that you're going to come across some Doctor Who references.
Yeah, there was even something similar to the TVA that was cut from Red Dwarf. So we've only ever seen that in like missing scenes in Red Dwarf. Did I mention I'd present a Red Dwarf podcast? But the time police in Red Dwarf was a concept that they were actually planning on having on multiple episodes, and then they just cut them all. And it wasn't very funny, which is why they cut it from Red Dwarf, so it fits a bit better here, I think.
Right. I think in Doctor Who as well, they've explored the idea of having, like, supremacy over the flow of time.
Yeah.
And getting to pick how time plays out.
I think you've got to be realistic that if you're doing a time travel theme or basis for a show, you can't be completely original. But I think what they did do was they made it very much theirs.
I adore the TVA. I mean, I don't adore the concept of people of, you know, three gods deciding, yep, this is how time is meant to be. This is exactly how it's supposed to go. But the TVA itself, the retro office aesthetic is just amazing.
Yeah, I agree.
I love that kind of stuff. I was saying today, like, fantasy bureaucracy is just one of my favourite things.
Mm, mm. I found that it was very Kafka-esque and a little bit like, if you've seen the film Brazil, two things that are absolutely out of this world and quite old, particularly Kafka. But Kafka's stuff, The Trial, is based on being completely trapped in a world that you can't control and the bureaucracy and stuff like that. And similarly, Brazil is a very surreal kind of dystopic future where nobody has control over their own lives. I feel like the influences are my kind of influences, which is why I really liked this. And I liked it for the same reasons that you did, but perhaps you haven't seen stuff like Brazil, or you haven't read The Trial by Kafka.
I mean, I'm familiar with Kafka because one of my friends is an artist who has done quite a lot of work around this kind of sci-fi, but I haven't really explored that very much.
It's worth a read.
No, I'm more here from the sort of fantasy and design perspective. I adore the whole aesthetic of the place, and also I mean, Marvel always puts an incredible amount of detail into everything they do, of course, but particularly with places like office settings, like the TVA, you get all these glorious tiny details that get created. All of the forms, like the layout of the transcripts of everything Loki's ever said.
That was a wonderful scene.
Absolutely gorgeous outro. Yeah, it was. I could watch that for like 10 minutes. That scene was really funny. The outro with like the clocks and the filing cabinets and the labels and departments, signs on the walls, uniforms. All this thing is entirely up my alley because I'm an artist who I create like artifacts from a fictional town. So I type and I write letters. I've recently been making stamps. I usually fabricate photographs to create like an out of time feel. And so this whole sort of like retro aesthetic, nostalgia, a main thing I studied during my time at uni is media archaeology, which is a kind of vague, well, it's not a movement, it's kind of like people studying certain forms of art, which is where you, in the medium you use, you portray this kind of old tech, you know, it's about discontinued tech.
Okay.
So people using typewriters, people putting vinyl crackle on tracks, that kind of thing that shows that sort of potential future of a technology that is obsolete.
Almost steampunky kind of vibe.
And that's what I love about fantasy bureaucracy. Yeah, that's what I love about fantasy bureaucracy is because it is all just like bizarre space people, but they have weird little typewriters and like pages and little remotes and odd little TVs and security cameras and forms to fill out. And just the idea of designing all those things is just my idea of a good time.
I would query that a place as strict as the TVA, how did that guy get his kitty? Why was there a kitty? And was it a kitty or was it the same race as Goose?
A Flerkin.
A Flerkin. That's right. Yes. Could it be a Flerkin?
Yeah, well, I obviously, we loved seeing the little kitty cat because we both have cats. Such a good little office kitten. But I was thinking about, you know, the Morbius and the Hunters and the rest of the Minutemen at the TVA, and they're not like standard Earth humans that have, you know, gone to live out in space, which is more what people are used to, I think, in time travel media. You know, like in Doctor Who, most versions of humans we meet outside of Earth are from a distant future where Earth has colonized the rest of the universe,
yep.
Which is just like humans. But these people were specifically made by the timekeepers, these three gods intent on keeping the supposedly sacred timeline. So all of these humans are definitely, I think, a bit more than human, you know, because they can just throw around the Tesseract like it's no big deal. And that's interesting. I don't know if it's going to come into it, but I think, you know, if we see like Morbius or any of the others being a bit more powerful than perhaps a normal human should be, they are just children of God. They're not people of Earth.
Well, you remember, like, the last episode on the Primer, I talked about how Worf frequently got jobbed on Star Trek because the idea was to show the power of something even more powerful than the most powerful man on board the Star Trek Enterprise. Loki got jobbed again at the very start of this episode, which again shows you the power of the TVA. It was a one-hit, collar on, Loki, this fucking god, was defeated by someone with a staff. And I get it, but I do feel like the whole Worf effect, Loki needs to be badass for the rest of this show.
Yeah, with this starting episode, obviously Loki did have to be put in his place by the TVA to come to the realization that maybe he does want to help. But I feel like now we've had this one episode, that's enough now. let him use his magic, please.
Yeah.
We finally have all this time to explore his character. I want to explore his magic just as much as I want to see us explore, you know, his gender and his shape-shifting and stuff like that.
Yeah, and I think I'm glad that we didn't rush into anything about his gender when it was such an exposition-heavy episode. I don't think we need it in the first episode. As much as we might like it, I don't feel like it needed to smack you around the face with LGBTQ+, just because the character is that. We'll get there, and we'll get what we want. But this episode was very much a... almost... if you haven't seen Endgame, you needed a little bit of a recap. And that could have been tiresome, but I don't think it was. But there wasn't room to explore any of the sexuality or gender that we were looking forward to.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't have expected anything in the first episode. Particularly because Loki has just been taken in by these people and they know what he looks like in that form. So until he can... until he's like, you know, lost them, he's not going to be disguising himself in any way, because they know what he looks like then. He doesn't want to give them any more faces to memorize.
True.
Should he need to get away and disguise himself. I really loved the moment we had when Loki sneaks away to find the Tesseract, and he just sees all those Infinity Stones in the drawer.
That was a major
moment. And realizes, oh god. Yeah, and it was, you know, it was a funny, like, it started off as like a funny small gag, like, oh, we get loads of those, but like, just the look on his face, like, the timekeepers are so much more powerful than he ever thought something could be.
It was very much a statement.
And that's really scary to him.
It was a statement of the power level that we're working with here.
Yeah, and also that guy is just sat at his desk with, like, 20 Infinity Stones in his drawer, hasn't been tempted to use them, nor does he care that they're there.
And he was clearly a massive Jobsworth, really low level, you know? Like, this guy who's, like, a pencil pusher, junior level, and he's got all those Infinity Stones, I think. And the paperweights thing, right? I want an Infinity Stone paperweight. If Marvel Disney don't make that as merch, they are missing a trick.
Yes, this is true. See, I was just complimenting whoever works in their merchandising today because I found out that they've been selling Cruella sewing patterns. And
of
as a sewist, I adore that. I'm not crazy about the fact that they've made Cruella, but I'm here for the fashion. the fact that they're selling sewing patterns based off the movie costumes is very cool. More of that, please. So yeah, some really unique merch from the TVA would be fantastic. I would love that. I heard someone jokingly complaining that they've wanted like Loki merch since back on like the first four Avengers, and now they finally do it and it's just beige TVA prison uniforms.
Brilliant.
And I was like, you're not wrong. When we got a lot of Loki merch, beige wasn't really what we were expecting.
No, very true.
But yeah, that's fun. Another thing about sort of clothes is Hunter B-15, the woman who goes to fetch Loki from Mongolia and also gives, accidentally distracts Mobius so that Loki can run around the TVA for a bit. Her, like, armor, her kind of... yeah, her body armor is just fantastic. It's amazing. I was just kind of blown away by the chest plate because I don't like modern armor. I don't like, you know, like the sort of modern day aesthetic of, you know, like riot gear, that kind of thing. I don't like it, but I love that it's just a well fitting and well made and not sexualized at all chest plate. Because it's, you know, it's, she just looks really cool and it's not got, like, unnecessary boob holders, you know, in this chest plate that she's wearing. And I love that, and I think it's brilliant, and I think she looks fantastic and very strong. And she doesn't just look like she's wearing a bulletproof vest, you know, like in like Brooklyn Nine-Nine or something, where you see them all wearing like the same bulletproof vest and it just looks very bulky. This looks like very practical, like, armor to go and deal with these people. And I just love her costume. I don't care for, like, the, you know, modern combat gear, but I think she looks fantastic.
I think what's important here is that she is a soldier, but she's not a woman soldier. And she's not defined, like you say, by the boobs in the costume. It reminds me a little of Captain Phasma. How fucking badass was Captain Phasma in Star Wars? Grossly underutilized, but still incredibly popular and very cool. Almost like the Boba Fett of the new films. I want more Phasma. And I might not want more Phasma when I get more Phasma, because I didn't particularly like the Boba Fett that I got when I wanted more Boba Fett. But what I'm getting at is, she was a very strong female character that was a soldier, rather than, it's a woman that's a soldier!
Yeah, I think definitely since, you know, characters like Brienne of Tarth and that kind of stuff, we've kind of moved on, you know, in Game of Thrones, we've kind of moved on from female fighters looking like feminized male characters, and it's like, I think we've come a long way with women's costumes from Black Widow's unzipped bodysuit.
I mean, I can see why Black Widow's unzipped bodysuit appealed to some folk. I can see that.
Even as they swing back towards like the heavy, like comic accurate costumes, like with Sam's new Captain America suit, is pretty much spot on for what the comic is, but it looks like feasible, it looks realistic. So I'm hoping that the costumes in this one will continue to be as good in honouring the comics and not hypersexualizing women or looking impractical. Me and Ian were saying during our episode on the first Avenger that you have to put in these campy moments to introduce these extraordinary concepts as real, because they're so extraordinary. If you do them completely straight, like, there's not really much to relate
to.
No,
I agree.
Back to the TVA, when the scene where he has to go across that room with his little ticket just reminds me so much of the scene in BBC's Miranda, where she goes to the airport and it has all the, you know, all the posts up, the zigzag, like, barriers, and it's like, why zigzag when there's nobody here?
Yeah.
Because you can't just duck under them. That's inelegant. So you have to just keep going around back and forth until you reach the office you're getting to, even if you're only one in the queue. It's just, I think it's kind of the height of, like, British comedy. It's just queuing.
Yeah. It was a very British joke, actually. I didn't think about it, but you're right. It was probably designed to appeal to people like us.
Well, my dad mentioned today that the director's British, which I didn't know.
Oh, okay. Right.
So that's cool.
Tell you something I did like. You remember I mentioned in the primer the trope of the torture collars, how everything has collars that make you do, you know, the threat is there. If you don't behave, we'll electrocute you or we'll blow your head off.
Yeah.
And it is a massive trope, but I liked what they did with it. It's not torture. It's control without brutality. If you've got one of those collars on, you can't hurt anyone because they just blip you back. And I thought that was really, really clever and a nice little take. And I'm glad that it was something that wasn't just a massive trope, but it was a thoughtful twist on the trope.
Yeah, I really liked it. And it also shows how kind of trivial time travel is to these people. Because as Loki pointed out, they don't care that the Avengers time traveled. They time travel all the time. Obviously, some time traveling is permitted within this sacred timeline. And in the TVA, they kind of exist outside time. Morbius says that time moves differently there. And so obviously, time travel is very trivial to them. And so their way of, you know, keeping these prisoners in line is literally just, oh, you're gonna try and run away, oh, I'm just gonna zap you back. which is clever. I like it. It's fun,
and it's really, really interesting that they use the term sacred timeline. I wonder if later on in the series there's gonna be a look into religion and faith and and the nature of God or gods, or it's just a really bold statement that the timeline that we have seen in the films is the timeline, rather than an alternative, for want of a better phrase, an alternative timeline. I mean, are we in an alternative timeline? Is this the best Mark that exists? Because, bloody hell, I'm a bit disappointed with myself if it is.
Well, I mean, I personally believe in essentially the multiverse theory, like, in real life. You know, the just... in some universe or another, everything exists. I don't know exactly what exists in this universe. You know, I don't know if fairies and mermaids and gods exist in this universe. I don't have evidence for them. But I know that whether in this one or another one, there's a universe where they are real.
Okay, that makes a weird sense.
And we have actually had some really nice little religious hints, which I think, you know, is going to be like a bit of an undertone to the show. Because obviously we have the timekeepers, which are three gods. Loki himself is a god who is questioning his identity. And then we had that scene in France where the kids seem to believe that Loki was the devil. You know, a Christian take, and the image of the sort of the evil variant, the variant that's causing trouble for the TVA, setting fire to the Minutemen in Oklahoma, that kind of gave me, you know, witch trials vibes, with the, you know, the cloaked figure and the oil on the ground that it didn't you know, pan out to reveal that it was burning in, like, a symbol on the grass or anything, but that's what I expected.
Yeah, that was implied, wasn't it? Yeah. So I want to know whether the timekeepers are actually right or fair or benevolent, or whether this ends up being that they're really, really sinister, because there really does feel like a sinister dystopic undertone here in the style of the setting more than anything. It feels like it's designed to make your skin crawl, and I'm all for it. I like the idea of questioning authority.
Oh, yeah.
And I like the idea of, even when people think they're in a utopia, they're probably in a dystopia and they can't see it. I think there's a lot to explore there, and I'm fascinated by how deep they're going to go into that.
Yeah, the TVA is another take on the divine bureaucracy, you know. So in like The Good Place and Good Omens and other things like that, like, heaven and hell are sometimes portrayed as like bureaucratic offices, where everything is just these eternal beings having another day at the office, and it's like they live life like us, but on like another level. And it's, you know, implying that this, putting like the sort of capitalist metaphor onto gods and their servants, which I love, particularly the way they do it in The Good Place. The Good Place is fantastic. Anywhere with this sort of bureaucratic setting to it, anything that you put that metaphor onto implies that the overlords are evil overlords in some way, because it's implied that they're at the top of like this sort of capitalist hierarchy, just the way that a CEO is above his workers. These gods are above the Minutemen, which is just great. I love this stuff.
The metaphor is strong with a office setting that is religious. I think that's a really strong and potentially a little bit controversial metaphor, and I like it. I like it a lot.
It's definitely interesting to see how different people and different cultures try to comprehend the idea of gods in different ways. So, like, shows like American Gods and The Good Place and this are all, like, very different, but also similar in ways in their takes on gods from a point of view of the modern world. So it's kind of a phenomenon where the future is always limited to the present. So when people in the Victorian era were trying to envision the travel of the future, they envisioned steam-powered mechanical horses and carriages, because the concept of a car doesn't fit in with, it doesn't, like, it wouldn't come to them, because so far they haven't progressed from a carriage with something pulling it. So the visions of the future is always limited by the presence you're in. And so the idea that, you know, we're in this modern day, but there's these gods, and we can't quite comprehend how all the tiny inner workings of all this god's comprehension and its minions, that we just put them in an office. You know, it's really fun. I love that.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I do. I think the whole setting is so well done. And I like how it challenges Loki to think about himself, because he hasn't really lived in a bureaucracy. He's lived in more of a kind of oligarchy when it comes to Asgardian society.
Yeah,
and can I say the line? Can I say it? Trust is what for children and dogs.
Yes, that was a good line.
That sent shivers down my spine as a cynical old queen.
Yeah.
Lines like that make me go, oh, I wish I didn't agree.
Yeah, see, I'm a very trusting, kind of naive little optimist, so those kind of lines always make me laugh. You know, I'm just kind of like, yep.
I was a trusting, naive little optimist at 21, darling.
I'm 23.
Oh, okay. I was probably still a trusting, naive. I'm glad that you don't believe that, because it is horribly cynical. And I really hope that the world is better when you're 42 and you haven't been worn down like I have.
Well, that line was obviously very Loki. He does not trust many at all. He only trusts his mother, and later on he eventually trusts Thor.
Yeah.
But that's it.
Which he has done neither of those things yet.
Yeah, he hasn't even done those yet. Which is, we had that beautiful, incredible performance from Tom Hiddleston when he saw Frigga die in Thor the Dark World, which I actually watched yesterday, so that was quite convenient.
Mm.
For myself, a little recap on that one. Wasn't intentional, but we were feeling the Loki hype. And, oh man, his, you know, his grief was, it was such an amazing scene from Tom Hiddleston there. That was fantastic.
I feel that the whole thing that I had a massive concern about, I voiced this on the primer, was that this 2012 Loki hasn't gone through the atonement, the personal journey and the redemption that we have seen. And as simple as it was that he got to see the sacred timeline in the way he did, it works so well because of the response, because of the acting of Tom Hiddleston, because it shows you that even if you're taken out of time, your potential is still there. You are still the person that could become this best version of you that he is in the sacred timeline. And I don't feel like the fact that it was simple and done the way it was is to the detriment of the story, because we definitely needed the more feeling Loki, the more humane Loki. And, you know, they looked into that as well, how he's called the god of mischief, but he should really be called the god of malevolence. He's vile and nasty.
From what we got to see of him, yeah.
And remember, at that point, the 2012 Loki hadn't had any of this redemption arc at all. So I thought it was very, very well done. I don't think it needed to be a complex way of getting us to the Loki that we love and wanted. And I thought this was, basically this episode was an establishment of getting us that Loki and giving us the background and setting for the next 5 episodes, which are going to just, they're going to hit the ground running from next week, I think.
I think it used, you know, Loki's redemption arc, and a disappointing death in Infinity War really well to fuel this Loki and motivate him for the series, because I wasn't really sure where Mobius was going when he kept saying, you know, like, who are you? Why are you doing this? Do you enjoy hurting people? Why are you trying to rule? You know, why this? And I wasn't, you know, obviously he's, you know, questioning. It was kind of like an interrogation setup, but I was kind of like, you know, what's this all leading to? And then it's because in the sacred timeline, Loki is mostly a villain. He mostly causes pain and manipulates people. There's not actually that much mischief that we get shown. So when Mobius is questioning his motives, it's because the sacred timeline sees him in one way, which is this killer who causes people pain and then allies with his brother and eventually dies for him. And that's the way it was meant to go. And I think Loki is having learned what the TVA think of him and what was meant to become of him. He's now acting on, you know, he's trying to fight against that predetermined destiny that the TVA have laid out for him, and the guilt that he potentially gets his mother killed, that he was meant to get his mother killed. And also the hope that he can have an actual relationship with Thor, which we know, you know, deep down he kind of wants, even if he doesn't really care about it right now. So we've got, like, you know, just from... It didn't just feel like we were giving the audience a recap on MCU Loki. It was like, you know, we've now given Loki sort of, you know, three or four complex emotions and motivations that he now has to deal with during this series, which will give him like a whole new arc, which I think is really exciting. And I like that because, yeah, as I said, I was a bit worried of them erasing all of the work that they did in Thor Ragnarok, because I think Thor Ragnarok's one of the best films and the character work is great. But Infinity War kind of undid some of that, and I was worried that they were just completely going to throw it out, but I think they've used it in a good way here. You know, they've shown him, this is a good part of your future, but you're still going to die, you know?
And I think we have to look at the trauma.
It's all about the trauma.
Well, imagine seeing your own death and knowing that that is an inevitability. And that's scary. The whole seeing the timeline in his future is incredibly traumatic. And so this Loki is created by the trauma. This positive and better Loki is created by the trauma of seeing how another Loki was made a better person in a different way, which is fascinating, actually.
And also, when he comes to that realization that the timekeepers are so beyond the power that he, the power, like, hierarchy that he's used to, you know, humans, superpowered people, Asgardians, Infinity Stones, and Thanos, like, you know, that was kind of the hierarchy he was working under of power. And now he's found out that, you know, to the TVA and to the timekeepers, the Infinity Stones are nothing but paperweights. And they have just about 20 of them chucked in a drawer somewhere. And so these people that have laid out this plan for him can very much enact that plan. He's meaningless to them. And, you know, that's the sort of thing that Loki doesn't take very well.
No.
Because by rights, he is a very powerful being. But to find out that the timekeepers are apparently that powerful. I mean, for all we know, it could be an illusion. As he said at one point, it could actually just be an illusion of power, which is another theme of the show, is that all of this showmanship and villainy is about, you know, the weak creating the illusion of control. And so if we're exploring that theme, it's not completely unlikely that the timekeepers will be something similar. That if they're that powerful, you know, maybe it is just an illusion. Maybe those Infinity Wars... I mean, true, I would quite like it to be that powerful because it is quite cool. But I do also kind of like the idea that those were just props, you know? That was just a little prop Tesseract just to freak him out, you know? Like, that would be quite fun.
Yeah, I hadn't thought about it that
way. What if it comes full circle? What if variant Loki ends up being the timekeepers? This Loki that's running around stealing all these resetters, what if it turns out that he's the one that makes the sacred timeline in the first place? Like, what if it's like some whole crazy conspiracy that doesn't make any sense, you know? It's not going to be like that, but that would be funny.
It could be. I mean, for every fan theory that is completely wrong, somebody gets it right.
I mean, I'm excited to see maybe some kind of timelines that, you know, like, you know, in Doctor Who, when the Master comes back, the Doctor, like, freezes the TARDIS so it can only time travel back to the end of the universe and Martha's modern London, which is where he was heading to. And he arrives a few months before them and fabricates that whole existence to himself and makes himself Prime Minister of England. And I feel like, you know, the Vote Loki bit and other potential parts of this series, you know, could be kind of similar to that, and that would be really fun. You know, just a bit of villainous embedding yourself into history. Because we haven't seen the Vote Loki bit. The D.B. Cooper reference, shout out to my tutor Kevin, who pointed that one out to me from the trailer, was just a bit of a kind of a throwaway memory, like a bit of a funny sketch to put in there to be like, we know your whole history, here's a funny thing you did, we'll show you on the video. But there are a few things in the trailer that obviously we haven't seen yet, like the Vote Loki moment.
Well, we've only seen a sixth of the whole series.
Five times as much more fun to be had. Yeah, and one last thing I wanted to go back to is the amazing little educational animated short.
Oh, yes.
In the TVA of Miss Minutes, which is voiced by the amazing Tara Strong. I mean, I studied animation. I love this. It's so much fun, and it is, you know, it's that nostalgia, the like nostalgia art of the animation style. It's really fun, proper corporate artwork up there. And yeah. Tara Strong is just brilliant. I wrote down a few of the people she's been. You know, Timmy Turner from Fairly Odd Parents. She's been Harley Quinn. She was Ben 10. She did the voice of Sunny Baudelaire in Series of Unfortunate Events, the recent Netflix series.
Okay.
She makes the noises for Sunny, which I didn't know.
Brilliant.
That's funny. She's MJ and some other voices in the Ultimate Spider-Man series, which I've recently started watching. Pretty much any sort of fandom under the sun that has been animated, Tara Strong has been in it. She is very cool, and I just loved Miss Minutes. I thought she was hilarious, and
yeah.
It was just such a fun little video. And of course, we get the reference to the Nexus. So the Nexus events, as they called it in this, is what happens when, like, the multiverse timeline, like, the streams cross. And that's referenced in WandaVision with the advertisement for Wanda's antidepressants.
Yes.
The branded Nexus. So these are all hints that are supposed to have, you know, built to or harken back to the Multiverse of Madness. And it's literally, you know, mentioned. They say madness of, like, multiple universe war or something. Like, they essentially say Multiverse of Madness in that Miss Minutes short, and that was just some lovely little references there. I love that.
They're clearly drip feeding us something that will kind of be a huge deal, and I like this. I think the fact that what we've seen will be a nice kind of addition, but probably not necessary if you don't watch the telly shows for the Multiverse of Madness. And potentially for Spider-Man as well, if they're going to be doing multiverse stuff in that, which it's heavily, heavily rumoured they are. And the slow burn, man. I love me a slow burn. I love seeing, oh shit,
yeah,
that was that. And it could be years later. I love that. And the fact that Marvel are confident that they have got years and years and years to come just makes the story stronger and more sophisticated and more interesting. And the confidence that they have is only going to be beneficial for what we see over the next 5 or 10 years.
It's fantastic. They're obviously really good at building stories, you know, because we've seen them drop hints, you know, all the way back in Iron Man and Avengers that are linking up to things now, like Shang-Chi. There was earlier mentions of, like, the Ten Rings and stuff back in Iron Man's day.
Mm.
Lots of tiny little things that are coming back now. And with the Netflix series, there was a lot of small details that crossed over between the five series, which was awesome. I love those tiny details. And then again, they're doing it here in the Disney Plus shows.
I want to talk to you about the Netflix series, because the scene with Coulson, which confirms that he did die, it means that Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is an alternative timeline. It isn't Sacred Timeline. So...
yeah. Yeah, because Feige did say that it was no longer canon, along with Peggy Carter.
But this confirms it in the world.
So I think what they might be meaning by canon now is Sacred Timeline canon. And I also just love that they're really... what the charm that the Netflix series had is the crossing over of characters. You know, Claire meeting pretty much every one of the Defenders before they met each other. Luke Cage being in Jessica, Foggy later being in Luke Cage, that kind of thing. And what the Disney Plus shows are kind of leaning into, their little quirk, is these amazing shorts. The advertisements in WandaVision, the GRC advert in Falcon and the Winter Soldier, and then this brilliant corporate animated short. And I hope we get more of those, because Disney do that really well, and I really like it.
And it's made it clear that, you know, we've got this Sacred Timeline, and these little shorts are brilliant. But the Phil Coulson thing has confirmed that this is no longer in the MCU. And it's still not completely confirmed whether or not the Netflix shows count. And there's the rumour that Matt Murdock is going to be Spider-Man's lawyer. So is it Charlie Cox playing the Sacred Timeline Daredevil? Or is it the Daredevil we've seen who's gone through all the traumatic stuff with, you know, being dead in inverted commas, dealing with the Hand, dealing with the Punisher? Because if it's that Daredevil, it means the Punisher exists in the MCU. It means that all the other Defenders exist in the MCU. And I really fucking loved the Netflix shows. I want them to be part of the MCU. I do. But I think that this Sacred Timeline thing is a really nice, sophisticated way of seeing whether or not the Netflix stuff, whether or not Cloak and Dagger and Runaways, whether they're in the Sacred Timeline, because Cloak and Dagger and Runaways crossed over, so they're in their own timeline. But are they in the Sacred Timeline?
Yeah, and then of course the X-Men as well.
Yeah.
It's actually interesting that Loki is coming out before Strange and before Spider-Man, that, you know, we'll have multiverse shenanigans in them, because, you know, potentially Loki could liberate the MCU from this Sacred Timeline, from the Timekeepers. So maybe in this series, Loki could open up the possibility of timelines crossing, which allow for the multiverse of the Nexus events to take place in, like, future parts of the MCU.
Yep.
Which would be fantastic. You know, that could be one way that they do it, is that Loki manages to free us from the constraints of the Sacred Timeline, which would probably throw a lot of things out of balance, but that's kind of what we need now that Thanos isn't here to unbalance everything by deleting half of everything.
Well, here's the thing. We still don't know if Loki's going to be the good guy or the bad guy here. He is the main protagonist. That's obviously the show's named after him. But could he become incredibly powerful by manipulating the TVA? Or could he become this reluctant hero that's atoning for past sins because he's seen his future? We don't know. And I love this. I love that we still don't know. Because the whole point of the Loki character is that he is grey. He is a representation of the greyness that is humanity. We aren't black or white, good or bad. We aren't anything other than complex creatures. And I love this. I've got no inkling whether or not by the end of this, Loki's going to be the good guy who's done his redemption again, or he's going to be this very powerful being that they will have to contend with later on in the MCU.
It's all up in the air once more. It's fantastic.
Before we go, that theme is everything. Oh, mate.
Oh,
I loved it.
The credits, the outro, I can't. It was, and the just the titles himself. I hope the titles, like, I think the titles, you know, because this week we got the black and white with the fonts changing with just the title. I think that's going to change aesthetics every episode.
I also think you're right.
Because this week was black and white, which is kind of, you know, similar to like a corporate clock typewriter type thing. And I think that's going to change every episode, and that's going to be gorgeous. I'm so excited. Mm. Yeah, I'm living for that outro.
Oh, it made me just like, oh.
It's definitely the best outro of the three shows. Whew. It's right up my street. You know, just beautiful set dressing, props, design. Just the moment the clock came up and then the multiple hands came up on the clock. I literally just went, ooh, you know, like when I watched it, I was like, yes, this is the best. I might have to try and make myself a clock like that that's got multiple hands that just spin at all different times. Because I don't really, you know, I'm not going to be telling a time with a clock. I find them difficult to read. But, like, if I just have one there for fun, that would be great. Just a Loki clock from the TVA.
That's more merch. More merch ideas.
That's merch. I want the clock. Yeah. There you go, Disney. You can have that one. You can have that one only if you hire me.
Good.
So, yeah, that has been our discussion on Loki Episode 1, Glorious Purpose. I've been Carpenter Lockwood. You can find me on the social medias as Vintage T, which is Vintage_T3A. And also in the sci-fi fantasy podcast, The Nightmare Portal. Mark, where can the peoples find you?
So if you want me on Instagram or Twitter, my personal one is at Mark Adams HC, MarkAdamsHC. And I have podcasts across the network and another one that isn't on the network. I've got Life's Milestones, which is based on my job as a humanist celebrant, where I talk to people about the milestones in their life. That's at Life's Milestones on Twitter. I've got my podcast on Kids Telly, where two people from different generations look at each other's favourite telly shows, and one's looking at it with rose-tinted glasses, the other one is looking at it with less rose-tinted glasses. And that's called Right in the Childhood, at RITCpod on Twitter. I'm also on Shipwrecked and Comatose, which is the Red Dwarf podcast that I talked about earlier, and that's at Red Dwarf Pod on Twitter. And finally, my tattoo podcast, which is called Ink Stories, at Ink Stories Pod on Twitter and Instagram. That is about the stories about why people get tattoos. Have a look at all of my podcasts. If you're listening to this, it's a podcast, so just search it on your podcast. Well, search it on whatever you're using to listen to this right now.
That's been me and Mark this week. Us two and Luke are your main hosts for this series. Next week, hopefully, it'll be me, Luke, and our beautiful guest, Rowan, to talk to you about episode 2. Thanks for joining us for another episode. And remember, we are part of the We Made This podcast network. And Loki is not all we're discussing. So we'll give you a taste of what you might have missed on the network in just a moment. We'll see you next time on Podcast 616, where we are burdened with glorious purpose to talk about the MCU.
Elsewhere on We Made This.
Pick a disc.
Imagine if George R.R. Martin had a mental breakdown, decided that his main mode of transport was talking to him and was talking to him and telling him to kill people, and he somehow managed to find a way into Game of Thrones, and he was told to kill Sansa Stark because she reminded him of an ex-girlfriend. That's technically what the plot of this album is an analogue to.
Yeah, you kind of nailed it. Yeah.
So...
it in their childhood.
Normally, we take it in turns. I pick a show that you've never heard of. You pick a show that I've never heard of.
Yeah.
And we flip it and we flip it and we flip it. But we're doing Mad Mutant Month. This was your idea.
Yeah,
tell everyone about Mad Mutant Month.
Well, because the vaccines turned us all into mad mutants.
Really?
No, we were looking for shows that have sort of like spanned through generations of childhood, whether that's through reboots or whether from like... We were looking for, yeah, shows that sort of like managed to span through Gen X, Millennial to Gen Z. And one of the ones that has done that through both reboots and reruns is Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Teenage Mutant Hero Turtles.
Cerebral Jukebox.
The whole premise of the song is young, you know, lads going off to get blown to bits for no real reason other than they were sent there by a magistrate or needed the money. It's a real stark contrast, the whole series and this song about patriotism, duty, and the sort of horrors of it as well, that you'll probably die. Because in the Napoleonic Wars and the sort of preceding wars, you know, these were like teenagers getting sent to countries that they'd not even read about in books because they couldn't read, to get blown to bits.
Check out all of these shows and more on the We Made This podcast network.
Welcome to the Time Variance Authority. I'm Miss Minutes, and it's my job to catch you up before you stand trial for your crimes. So let's not waste another minute. Step up to the desk and don't forget your ticket.
Oh, yes, yes, my ticket. I just had it. I think I put it in my wallet. Bear with me. No, it's not there. I must put it in my back pocket. It's okay, I've got my ticket. Don't worry. Just bear with me. Shit, where did I put it? It's not there. I don't think I put it in my sock. Bear with me, just bear with me. I don't know where it is. I did get a ticket. I have got a... Ah, shit.